I don't think analytics is going away, but I will tell you that there is a generation gap. Okay. So what I have seen is that there is a, I think there's a part of, there's an older part of millennials go forward a bit later on that kind of like, you know, maybe they've been around for a while. They've seen the quantitative computing hype and all things that we maybe haven't seen our generation. And they're a little bit underwhelmed, or they feel as though, well, if ChatGPT is going to answer all these questions, then what is the purpose of my job?
Mika, welcome to the Data Bytes podcast. So happy to be chatting with you today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
It is such an exciting time in the world of data, analytics, data science, AI, because AI tools are changing everything, right? Even in the way that we do analytics, we're chatting about, like, it's changing the way we do podcasting. And we're like, okay, we need to, like, upgrade all of our tooling system to the latest and the best tools, because, like, we all want those AI features within our workflow and productivity. How are you seeing this start to change in the realm of just BI and analytics? Like, how is AI start to influence how individuals are starting to work with data as well?
So it's funny that you ask that, Sadie, because I use ChatGPT for every day. And I use it for everything. I mean, literally, from like, one of my favorite use cases that I tell people about is like, I, you know, just run around. I have stuff in my fridge. I just put the nut ingredients and I'm like, I need a 20-minute meal. Like low maintenance. Like if it gives you something that's too much cooking, I'm like, no, low maintenance. And it just spits out some awesomeness with a link. And so I think the first thing that's changing is just going to happen is the expectation. So with analytics today, you know, we're a customer getting like reports and dashboards and customer getting fed. We're bridging on a time to where now with generative AI, where I think end users are going to be a customer asking a question, aka a prompt, and just getting what they want. I think the days of like creating something static, you know, there's all these articles that said dashboards are dying or they're dead. They're not dead as yet, but if you are not thinking about the instantaneous satisfaction a generative AI creates for reporting and you're not embracing it, you're a dinosaur. So I think the expectation will change for sure. And I think that'll trickle down into all elements of BI analytics, from requirement gathering. You know, like one of the things, I was speaking to a leader the other day and he was talking about the fact that like when we start talking to people or our users, they're not sure what metrics to use. And I looked at him and I said, have you opened ChatGPT? I was like, pump in the industry. Pump in the line of business and ask it, pump in your competitors and say, what should I be measuring? I'm like, it's literally that simple. So I just think that like, obviously it takes a bit of critical thinking, but I think right now the expectation and the instantaneous gratification, that's going to just drive. I think it's like iPhone 2000, you know, 2000 again, like it's, people are going to expect, I have a question, I get an answer and it comes with visuals immediately.
Yes. It reminds me of my first corporate job ever. I got paired with a buddy, like an onboarding buddy. And I was like, this is great. I can ask my buddy any question. I do remember one time I came to my buddy with a question. She's like, I love all your questions, but maybe you try asking Google first some of your questions and then come and ask me. This is like, that's what people will be saying here shortly, just as you mentioned, right? Okay, that's a great question. Why don't you try asking ChatGPT or Claude or something? And then if you don't get what you need and you need additional insight, go and ask additional people, but like start there.
Yep. Yep. And even then, I think, you know, once, you know, these models are consuming documentations, like the one good thing about the pandemic and AI coming right now, Sadie, is that we all have Otter, right? Or some AI transcript, and these models just swallow them. It's the best thing since fried rice. They swallow requirements. They swallow Notion docs. And so, you know, there's a high chance that you may not have to find a person. You can access my knowledge, my manager's knowledge, my previous manager's knowledge. Like we're getting to that point where the historic data we've been collecting can finally be used in a way to close the gaps.
So you created a framework for BI dashboard formula methodology. Do you see this changing now, these tools? What are you doing, right?
Yeah, so we have our BI data. Actually, so what we're focused on in the last 3 years is right before the pandemic, we took a segment of our BI dashboard formula methodology and created our BI data storytelling framework, which has been widely adopted by, you know, huge companies like Costco and Esri and different companies. And what we're doing right now as we speak, she was saying, AI, so not only am I rewriting my course, but I'm shortcutting a lot of the elements that our students are doing manually right now. So in our course, because we have a class that is coming up October 26 to 28, I'm going to be teaching them how to use it to help gather requirements, to how using the transcripts, how to assess what that looks like, make sure there's no gaps, how to create the story, how to do a gap analysis on the story. Like, I'm going to go pretty wild. Now, what am I running into? I have a few customers, believe it or not, and I love your thoughts on this, where AI is blocked, right? And they're afraid of, like, you know, because ChatGPT does lie. Let's be honest. I don't know if you ran into that. Like, it gives you quotes that don't exist. But for us, I'm going to show them how to shortcut not just ChatGPT, but other AI tools to help accelerate even visual generation. Why? You don't need to sit down and think about the chart anymore. You can plug it in and say, what type of chart do I need to create? You can plug in what you're trying to ask and say, give me the agenda. You know what I mean?
The speed from nothing to prototype. I mean, one of the things that I think, you know, these large language models are great for is really that prototyping phase, right? You can prototype within seconds. Again, like, because of hallucinations, we never want to take the human out of the loop. But to test out, I mean, you can instantly see, you know, different metrics and how that may affect your business and different ways to visualize it and also have somebody to talk to. Can I just mention, like, how important this is? It's like the world of analytics can be a very lonely place where you're in some back room. And yes, of course, this is an artificial model, but I have found it so helpful just to brainstorm different ideas with and have a conversation and go back and forth in a conversational manner.
I agree 100%. And like I said, one of the things that I'm going to teach my students first and foremost is to use Author, take the transcription of the sessions that they're having, and then use ChatGPT to get the intelligence out of the conversation. Like, at minimum, I'm like, just do that. Ask it questions like, what did you hear? Summarize this conversation. Give me the insights. What are some follow-up questions? And just get some ideation around, how do I further the discussion? You know, what did I miss? Because, you know, you're in an hour conversation, 2 hours. Our brain, it's already been proven. We capture only so much percentage. And so even using it for that, even if you're not generating a chart, I think that in itself and that level of intelligence, to your point, and just bouncing ideas and also getting references. You know, they're referencing this in sales. Could you give me a study online, right? ChatGPT is great. Could you give me a quote? Could you give me a statistic? What happened before 2022? And so I think that, like, the sky is just the limit. I think the only limitation right now is the human brain.
Yeah. So in your experience, have you had any instances where you're working with analytics teams and they're cautious to use it because they feel like it's going to replace their job, right? They can see how fast it can input an initial analysis. My stance on that is it's going to replace any job. Our hunger for these insights is just going to increase because we can produce them faster. But what's been your response to those individuals and kind of how do you think things are going to move forward? Is analytics going away and is ChatGPT going to do it all for us?
I don't think analytics is going away, but I will tell you that there is a generation gap, okay? So what I have seen is that there's an older part of millennials go forward a bit later on that kind of like, you know, maybe they've been around for a while. They've seen the quantitative computing hype and all things that we maybe haven't seen in our generation. And they're a little bit underwhelmed or they feel as though, well, if ChatGPT is going to answer all these questions, then what is the purpose of my job? Then I think you have this other generation, which I think I fall in. I think you fall in, which is to your point. We see the opportunity. We're like, wait, I can work smarter now, you know, because the reality is that most analytics teams right now, Sadie, they have more work than they can even imagine anyway. For like the gyro requests are piled up. I mean, find me a leader that's like, oh, we're great. Yeah, no, we're on schedule. It doesn't exist. And so I think that the teams that get ahead are going to be the ones that understand how to work smarter and not harder, and really sit down with their team and say, let's list out the things that we're doing today. And let's see which one of these tasks we could use AI for in an intelligent manner to take it off of our desk. And so I just think that the people that have that mentality, which again, I see it more in like the older generation, I go back to dinosaur age. I think they have a shelf life. There's no good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's similar if we look at kind of any technology trend curve, right? Is that you have the early adopters, then you have kind of the mass of the population, and then it's really those last leggers, and then that's when it becomes uncool, right? It's like when your parents got on Facebook died, right? So I also think there's going to be that portion of it, and everyone will start to use these tools and accept them. But you just have to decide, like, what wave of adopters do you want to be in? And there's pros and then there's cons to each one, right? If you're too late of an adopter, you're going to miss the boat and it's going to be uncool and people are going to move on to the next thing. So I think it's important to understand, you know, like, what wave of adoption you want to be in.
I agree 100%. And again, I think all the caution is warranted. I mean, we're in tech. We know the hype cycles are very, very tight. But I think on like big data, which is like the last hype cycle I remember, I don't think this is one of those hype cycles. I think this is here to stay. And the people who figure out how to use it to their benefit are going to be the ones that move ahead.
In addition to a lot of new technology that comes out, we typically see them getting to minority population last. Are you seeing any kind of bias with these new AI tools getting out in terms of just diverse populations and being able to use them and access them and, you know, the power? Because we just talked about, like, someone who uses these tools, particularly even in BI and analytics, is going to be supercharged, right? They're going to be able to do more, to accomplish more. My question is that equally distributed? And what are you seeing happening in the space today?
Okay, so I have two mindsets to that. Obviously, we have the internet, the tools are available to anybody, right? I think the challenge that you have with the more minority crowd is not the access issue anymore. I think it's an awareness issue sometimes. You know, I think access is fixed. You get on, if you have a dial-up or you have a phone these days, ChatGPT has an app, whatever, not just ChatGPT, all these AI tools, most of them require a browser and a phone everybody has access to. I think the race that we're running, even if you go look at like all the, a lot of the AI startups, it's all the same type looking people, just like before, right? If you look at the previous gold rushes that we had from the web to data to, it all looks the same again, right? And there's a reason for that. It's because of knowledge, not access, but pre-awareness and access to resources to utilize it faster. So I think that there is, again, the gap of like, so, well, it's available, everybody could do it. That's fine, but you also have to know what you're doing. And if you look at the startup AI world, I think it's a good preview of like, why don't we have more women doing AI startups? Why don't we have more minority? You know what I mean? Like, you see it trending the same way that the last couple of gold rushes trended as well. So I do think that there is a real problem there in terms of the awareness and not access to technology, but access to the resources to make it useful.
Yeah. And then I think even then a bigger problem building off of what you said was really, how do we then move from awareness to action in some of these initiatives? You know, broader than even the fact of just what I would call your typical D&I initiatives in corporations, there's a lot of badge acquisition, right? Which is, we put a badge on ourselves that we support these initiatives. But how do we move to real action in this?
We talked about this. I'm just so over it. I'm just over it. You know, it's funny. I was on MDS Fest on a panel literally earlier this week with women talking about this, like women in data founders and where are they? It was triggered by a young lady who went to Snowflake, went to the conference, looked around. She was invited to a founder event and was like, where are all the women? Like, legitimately, like, this is like, we're in Vegas. Like, this is not great. And, you know, when you ask this question, you know, I sit down and I think about, there's just so many things that come to mind when you talk about what the challenges are and how do we move it forward. Did you see what just happened in the media industry with all of the DEI leaders that supposedly stepped down back to back from Disney, Fox Entry? Did you see that happen? It just happened all in like a week or two.
No, I saw an article that there were a lot that had lost their jobs. And that was from the article standpoint. It was the fact that, hey, right now the economy is in a little bit of a tough situation. People are trying to cut costs. And what do you find is one of the first things that gets cut costs, right? All the DE&I chiefs that we hired during the pandemic, we now, 3 years later, realize we do not need these individuals anymore, right?
Well, is it we don't need or it's not important? You know what I mean?
Oh, well, yes, I'm using air quotes right now with need, right? It's how you define the need. It goes to show, right, you know, where are you putting your priority? You can look and you can say something, but where are you putting the funds to drive that initiative forward? I mean, it's common business practices we know. Like if you say, hey, we're going to do this and this is our strategic priority and we support it, you provide the resources, the funding to be able to do it, right? You have the best team and the support and you measure it and you continue to push forward until you achieve those goals. Unfortunately, what we're seeing in the environment today is, hey, we said we're going to do it. We said it's important, but we didn't find the funding to support it and what to make the change. And we now no longer even are having the teams, right? So it's I think people are starting to wake up and saying, wait, do you really believe in this? And do you really support it? Because when you don't back it with funding and resources, it's really hard to say that you support this.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And again, what we saw was a lot of badging. So you got a press release out. All the women, you know, us women, we got excited. Yeah, you hired Sadie at the end. Yeah, big company. And then, you know, as you said, post-pandemic, the first people to get cut. And it's deeper than that. It's not just the DE&I. They're just cutting women out of the workforce. I mean, we've heard the horror stories about women being let go during maternity leave. Like, it's just, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just very interesting. And I think one of getting to the solution, you know, and this is what I was trying to get to on that panel. What I said to them is, having been around this for like the last 12 years, you know, what I call our field the ultimate sausage party. That's what I refer to it as, right? And having been around this for a while, I always said that asking for help is no longer working because it just falls on deaf ears. We get a few promises for you to get a promotion, to CEO, whatever you need to do. A little badge and you move on. We have to have the people that look like us in the decision-making seat. I just think that like the phase of like we're asking for help, and don't get me wrong, there's amazing allies, but the reality is that people resort back to their comfort zone when crap hits the fan. That's what's happening right now. The investors are coming down on them and it's like, okay, guess what? All these fun projects, which is what this was, a fun project, is done. And so I think the solution is more female VCs, more female leaders, more female CEOs, people that literally do exactly the same thing, which is, hey, when I need a head chef, my head chef is Sadie. My head chef is Miko. So I'm going to have to cut what I have to cut and I'm bringing in the A-team.
So how do we get there with more female founders, more female VCs? I mean, both you and I have started our own companies. It is not an easy task to be a female founder, right? You know, just saying to individuals, hey, you should go and do this. That's great. But where's the support to be able to do it? And understanding that it's already, you hear about it all the time in any of the startup books. It's difficult to be a founder. We know that. Now put on that you're a woman of color, whatever it be. Okay, it's 10 times, 100 times more difficult, right? So yeah, what are we doing or how can we support either channels to foster more female founders and give them the support necessary?
So that's a great question because I think foundations, like the one you've started, organizations are the first step. I always think just having like been bred from community, that's how I came up. My first resort is always my community and network. You know, and while it may not be large city and while we not have 1,000 women to model, right, or hundreds of thousands of women to go, oh, that's what success looks like. They are women that are available in the community that you could reach out to and model after to at least have a hook, you know, something that kind of helps you to go. So I think the first thing is latching on to community. If you're in data, I think women in data is great. There's Anita Borg as a good example, you know, for tech. And there's these organizations with large wads of women. And within those organizations, you can find your crew, right? I think the other thing as well is mentoring. So I know people have said this before, but I think when people hear mentoring, they're like, I don't know what to do. And I always tell them, I say, look, go online, find three women that you want to be like and send them a message. Part, you want to be an entrepreneur? If you can get through that first set of sending random messages, you might be okay. You know, if you can't do that, probably you should shut down. It's going to be a lot of no's. You're doing a lot of random writing and hearing a lot of no's or nothing back and your anxiety. So it's a good test. And I say, you know, write them and say, hey, I get those emails. I'm getting ready to get started. I know you're busy. Could we do a 15-minute call? Because I know for me, some of those 15-minute calls changed my life.
Yeah. And I would also say, don't underestimate just the power of ad hoc mentorship, right? I love that you mentioned just even a 15-minute call. Maybe they were your formal mentor for a year, 2 years. It doesn't need to be formal. For me, some of the best mentors I've had have been those ad hoc calls, those ad hoc meetings. You know, something that I did early on in my career was I would have what I called curiosity meetings with people, and they loved it, right? I would send them a message. I'd be like, hey, I do this thing called curiosity meetings. I'm really curious about your work, your line of business. What you find is people love to talk about themselves, right? So if you do that and you spend the first 30 minutes learning about them, which you're getting that mentorship just from learning about them, then eventually they ask you about you and you start to build this relationship, right? And why I love these so much is because, one, it allows you then to find who you're really connected with and have, you know, a vibe and a bond with, right? So the other side of things is you may look at somebody and be like, they look like a great mentor for me. Have a meeting with them, be like, nope, not for me. And that's totally fine. Looks great on paper and nothing wrong with that individual either. It's just, hey, you may be a different place in your life and you may need a little something different. So don't underestimate what I'd call the 15-minute mentor.
Yes, that's what I was saying. How many 15-minute calls have I done? After this, I have two coming up. I tell people all the time, even 10 minutes, you know, the thing about it is that just an introduction, right? Sometimes that's all you need, or just a point in a direction. It may not even be a call of Siri, here's how you change your life. They may literally just redirect you and that could change your life in that single 15 minutes. No, you were looking here. Actually, I have a friend. I have a this, I have a that, and that redirection maybe, and that's happened to me. So I so agree with you and I love the curiosity calls. I just used to ask a ton of questions and tell them if you could pick two of them and give me 15 minutes, I'd be in depth to you. And I used to tell them, I'm going to be somebody, by the way, and I won't forget you. I used to put it because, you know, so some people like confidence too, right? They like to see, all right, this person got some kahunas to put in there. But I think either approach, I agree with you. And that's where I would start. I talked to a lot of people. I'm just what are we doing? What's going on here? A matter of fact, I don't want to take too long, but one of the most impactful meetings I had was with the founder of Back Office. You remember that company? Back Office? So I was set up to do an interview with her, to do her interview for this magazine. And she had taken it from zero to 150 million by herself with her family, right? So I sit down with her and mind you, I'm young and I'm thinking, yeah, this is going to be me. So one of my friends hooked me up, do this interview. It's great. And I sit down with her and she's so gracious, beautiful woman. Her husband is with her, by the way. He's in the back. And I'm like, so before we get started, I'm like, do you want to ask you a few questions? And she's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. She's like, I read about your bio. You seem like you're on the way up. I was like, yeah. How do you do this? I'm like, I see the husband. I know you have kids. How do you do it? She says, I said, how do you balance? She looked at me and said, you don't. Balance does not exist. And if anybody tells you that, they're lying. Things fall through the crack. I do not miss any of my kids' games. Stuff hits the fan at my company. She said, there's no balance. That conversation changed my life. You know, because I was like, is this what I want? And I had decided, I was like, no, family's too important to me. So you know, so it's just like, I mean, as I said, like you said, and that conversation was probably 5 minutes before interview.
Yes, have the courage to have the conversation and that just even the reaching out, you're going to learn so much in that process just from reaching out, right? The the confidence you're going to have because of that courage. So you shared a little bit about how important, you know, these 15-minute calls, these all the different mentors that you've had. But what was your journey to founding BI and analytics and data storytelling and the framework and everything that you've created today?
So I've been blessed. I'll put that out there. In Hebrew, we say Baruch Hashem. And it's community. So I literally founded a blog. Because I couldn't find anybody, not even to just look like me. I just didn't know if people were interested, Sadie, in the same thing that I was. Like, this was back in what? Do you remember Blogger? Oh my gosh, I'm aging myself. Do you remember Blogger? You do. Oh my gosh. We're millennials, right? Okay, if you're a kid, listen to this. And a lot of kids, just Blogger was Google's version of WP Press, whatever. Okay. So we've aged ourselves. It doesn't exist. It's nowhere to be found. But anyways, it was hot back in the day. And it's like, just plug in. It had a wiki. You remember the WYSIWYGI? And so I went online, just wanted to see if anybody was thinking like me, started a blog. And that blog literally changed my life. Like, there's just no good way to put it. And so for me, it was like back then, because we didn't have all these tools to see who you were. It was just, you know, emails, remember? Like good old Hotmail. It was connected to Hotmail. And like people would write me, didn't know how they looked or what they were. And like for me, it was just community. I latched onto community because I simply didn't have anything else to hold on to. And these people didn't look like me. We weren't from the same background, but it didn't matter. We had one thing in common, and we're fascinated by BI analytics. And so I had maybe a slightly different journey, but I think the journey I had with community now with LinkedIn and all, like again, women in data, where was this? Like, I would have been all over this when I started. I'm like, there's 800,000 women on LinkedIn. Meanwhile, I'm sitting in New York in the office going, okay, is there anybody out there that's crazy about visualization like I am? That's really the question I had, you know? And so I started with community, and then my community grew very quickly. Still didn't know who anybody was. That then led to the company and software I was working with, bringing me on board, and literally things just kind of took off from there globally. It was all about my community.
It really is. And I resonate so much with your first statement of, you know, you're sitting going, does anybody love visualizations as much as I do? I mean, that was my whole motivation for starting Women in Data was like, I'm going to need friends if I'm going to survive in this industry. And I want to just talk about this with other people. And also, this is going to be huge. Like, this space is massive. We need to be able to have others we can learn from, we can support, we can grow and get more women into this space. So, yes, we were both probably sitting at our computers alone, be like, is anybody else out there? Hello. And thank God for the internet. Yes.
Right. I mean, and again, things are on steroids now, right? Meetup.com and LinkedIn and TikTok. And just type in hashtags and you can find friends. I think when we started, it was, again, just a question. Is anybody out there as either passionate or there? And so there's so much opportunity now. Like, I mean, I think the sky's the limit.
So with the sky being the limit and, you know, back to one of your previous statements, just with in regards to AI tools, you mentioned almost that like your imagination is the limit now too, right? With what we can be able to create. That being said, what advice do you have for women in data today, you know, being a woman in data yourself, being a founder, leading the way in so many aspects, what advice do you give others in the field?
So I know people have heard this before, but I think I have a slightly different approach, which is like one is to keep learning. I'm a little bit of a tool junkie. So I personally have about 3,000 to 4,000 a month in SaaS. I know it's sick. If there's a problem, I'm aware of the problem. Unfortunately, any tool that promises me 10 more minutes in my life, and you're a phoner, so you know this. Like, I'm like, yeah, let me try, you know? Wow, 10 minutes in a day? Oh, wait, 30 minutes if I spend 20? I mean, it's like, I'm such a junkie. So curiosity has to be on level like 4,000. It's not regular curiosity you need. And when I say curiosity, that's just curiosity around writing people, but curiosity around just learning, right? Like, what is this? And so a good example, for instance, with AI coming out, ChatGPT is just the basic at this point, right? There's so much going on. Get online. Do you know how much I learned from TikTok and Instagram? how many AI channels I follow, how many YouTube channels I follow. I have channels that only show me AI tools all the time. And yes, there is a credit card buying problem. I'm aware of the situation, but that's not the point. The point is that, like, I bang up at least 3 to 4 tools a week, and I love it. I absolutely freaking love it. You know, so I think like staying on top of things is important. I also think using the stuff. So a lot of these tools in AI right now, I mean, in BI right now, Sadie, like Power BI and Tableau, they're all kind of embracing AI, right? Which is great. Go outside of that. You know, like they're using it in a very contained way, but the sky's the limit. So the question is, inside the boundaries of your company, inside of whatever you're doing, how could you maybe leverage it, use it for your own personal use or for your own use in what you're doing, you know, and really just pushing the limits. Also, go online and just see what other people are doing. And by the way, copy it. Facebook was not new. It wasn't a new concept. MySpace was around, you know. YouTube was a dating app, people. Like, if most people don't know, YouTube started as a dating app. And when it slid, it was supposed to be Tinder or something. And when it failed, they were like, crap, but our video module, we spent a ton on it. What can we do with that? You know what I mean? So, like, it's also not being rigid in what you're doing. It's like, you may start one way and, oh, well, what I started with isn't going well. What can you take from it? Right? And take that and try to make it work. You know this. When you started Women in Data, I'm sure you have had to, how many times have you had to rebuild your brand or rethink Women in Data?
Oh, re-platform, you know? Yes, 100%. It never ends. And it shouldn't. I think the other side of things too is just know that we as human species continue to evolve and continue are evolving. You know, even in 7 years, every cell in your body has regenerated. And so you are no longer the same person that you were 7 years ago, physically, like literally and physically. And so I think that's just helpful to know that if even you yourself are continually regenerating and renewing, we have to be doing the same for our mind, our businesses, and to be able to do that, follow our curiosity, as you mentioned.
Yep, I agree. And also just get in these AI groups. I know there are sausage parties right now, but like, how many discords am I in? You know, I listen. I'm like, oh, what's hot? I may not talk. It's a sausage party and it's some craziness, but I'm like, wait, what is that? So I don't know. I'm a little bit of a junkie. So for me, I'm on product hunt. I have the AI tools at FYI. Like I'm a little bit of an AI junkie at the moment. I haven't gotten off the dopamine yet.
I love it. So I was just reading some articles like, is the hype ending? You're like, nope, it's not ending anytime soon. You're still leading the way. So.
Yeah, no, until they run out of tools, I'm just going to keep testing. And some of them I've used have been game changers for me. So I'm, you know, I have a list of them and I refer them to people. I like it. I have an AI journal.
Well, I was going to ask, what's the best way for people to either get in touch with you, get access to your AI journal, learn from you? How do you prefer people connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. On LinkedIn, I think is the easiest way. So MICOYUK. I would say on TikTok and or Instagram, but my Instagram admittedly is currently locked down. And my TikTok is I consume and I learn. So I'm on TikTok a lot, consuming and learning information. So I would say LinkedIn is the best way. Just at MICOYUK. And I also have my podcast, Analytics on Fire, which I will be restarting again in September after a bit of a hiatus. So if you're geeked out about analytics, we definitely are going to be bridging the AI topic. That's definitely somewhere to check me out. And hopefully I'll be doing more stuff with you, Sadie. I think this is like what you do is so awesome. Thank you. Thank you for starting Women in Data.
Yes, and thank you for being a woman in data and leading the way in so many frontiers. This is what makes it all worth it. I'm glad, you know, two young data scientists who were working alone in their rooms have now finally met. So this is what it's all about.
I agree 100%. Thank you for having me. And for people listening to this, you know, don't just listen. I always say that, like, take action. AI in Google, AI in TikTok. I'm just telling you, an hour can literally change your life.
Well, that's a great way to wrap the show. Thanks again for coming on the Data Bites podcast. And to all our listeners, thank you. Remember to stay curious and keep learning. And we'll catch you next time on the Data Bites show. Bye, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the Data Bytes podcast. If you're looking for more resources to further your data career or find your tribe, we encourage you to become a member at womenindata.org. See you on the other side.